Welcome to the D Program, a desensitized look at sensationalized media. Here are your hosts, Angie and Sarah.
We get going?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Happy New Year. Ange, how you doing? Did you have a great New Year?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy New Year, everybody. Yeah, it was good.
How many New Year's resolutions have you already broken?
Zero, because I didn't make any.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a 100% success rate then. I've made a bunch. I haven't started implementing any of them yet. So.
No. You want to name off a couple in case anybody okay. needs some suggestions?
Sure, sure. So of course I'm the standard lose weight, get in shape, eat healthier. So I'm actually starting a program on Monday through this gym I go to that's really intensive nutrition and exercise program. It's like a 16-week program. So I'm starting that on Monday. So hopefully that'll hold me accountable a little bit, but so that's one resolution. Another one was to read 30 minutes every day and just make that a consistent habit.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I try to read, but I just feel like I'm not consistent and I'll go in phases where I don't read enough. And anyway, so that's kind of one. I haven't even started doing that though. So I don't know how well that's going, but.
Well, as far as working out, you're kind of a little workout beast. I wouldn't think that you would need to focus on that area very much.
The people at my gym wouldn't agree with you. They wouldn't.
Yeah. But even the fact that you say the people at my gym, so you know what I'm saying? Like that's leaps and bounds ahead of me and of many people. But, so
yeah, you got to buckle down, you know, you got to take care of yourself. I mean, over this last few years, we've seen how important that is. You know, COVID strikes people who are overweight and have all these pre-existing underlying conditions. So mm-hmm. it's more important now than ever to take care of your health and take it into your own hands. And so anyway, that's it. We'll see how the year unfolds. You know, I have to say this, I was really hopeful about 2022. I just felt like this was going to be a great year. And then I got some really devastating news right at the beginning of the year that I'm still a little bit in denial about. I don't think you're a big fan, but maybe some of our listeners are big Impractical Jokers fans.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know you love that show.
I love that show. I have to say, and this is going to sound really corny and cliche, but I went through a period in my life a few years back that was pretty dark, and that show, I'm not going to say it saved me. There were a lot of things that helped me through that period, but Impractical Jokers was certainly one of them. I mean, I just love the show. I love the guys. They're just amazing and they're not political. It's just a great show to like escape from everything. And just, mm-hmm. I fall asleep to YouTube compilations of their shows. Like that's what I put on as I'm falling asleep. Cause it clears my mind of anything that's racing through my mind and it just puts a smile on my face. And so I love the show. I'm a fanatic in every sense of the word. Okay.
Now you're making me feel like I need to see if I can.
You do, but you start at season one and watch all of them, because here's the other thing about the show is that a lot of times if you have an actor that you like, and you know, you like the character they play often, or you even appreciate the fact that they're good actors, but with Impractical Jokers, you really get to know them. So they don't know this, but me and them are like buds.
Oh my God. You know, like, right.
You know, they don't, it's like a one-sided best friend. Like I know them. I know them the way I know some of my best friends. And I,
right. So like, if you met them on the street, you like want to go up and like hug them and like, be like,
hey, what's
hey,
up?
It's Sarah. It's me.
And it's funny because they've talked about having that experience with other people on the street because people feel like they know them, because you get to know it. You just have to watch the show. You have to watch all the seasons.
So where do you watch it? It's on
True TV. So basically True TV is nothing but Impractical Jokers pretty much around the clock. They just show reruns of it almost all the time. They have a couple other shows they put out, but Impractical Jokers is such a hit for them. You turn on TV and it's pretty much back-to-back Jokers. But so, you know, the premise is it's these four guys, they've been friends since high school and they started the show, blah, blah, blah. But the devastating news is that Joe Gatto is leaving the show. And it's heartbreaking because all the fans of Impractical Jokers always, you have to have team, your, what team are you on? Who's your favorite Joker? And I, you know, I mean, that's, but I've always hesitated to pick one because I think they're all fantastic in their own ways. I love them all for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. So I've never picked who my favorite is, but but now with this news, I have to say that if you're asking me who I think the funniest is, the Joker with the best comedic timing and comedic performance, it's Joe, hands down. He is absolutely the funniest.
What a shame.
I love all the others for different reasons. They're all fantastic, but Joe is hysterical, and they're getting older anyway. I don't know how long the show is going to last, but I can't imagine it working without Joe. I just don't know how that works. But so I'm really sad.
Well, on a similar note, now granted it's not a comedy show, but I do like the host of the show, and his show is coming back for a new season this year, and that's Mike Rowe with Dirty Jobs.
Oh yes, that I have.
I do like Mike Rowe a lot. I like his sense of humor. I like his kind of dryness.
Yeah,
yeah, he's funny.
Well, maybe I'll have to replace Jokers with some Dirty Jobs.
Right,
Jokers.
Yeah, so
out, but.
So there is that.
So yeah, 2022 was off to a rocky start for me, learning about that. But otherwise, it's been pretty good so far. Although I will, as we start the show here, we did get some pearls of wisdom and some inspirational words from our president about the new year. So why don't you want to take a listen to what he had to say?
Let's do that. I think we should.
I think that'll cheer us all up. You know, Joe, yeah. That's kind of depressing, but the president has some inspiring words for us.
Yeah, let's take a listen.
Okay, here we go. Take it away, Mr. President.
There's a lot of reason to be hopeful in 2020.
There you go.
All right.
So a lot of reason.
I mean, I feel hopeful already.
Yeah. I mean, 2020 is a banner year.
Yep. It's going to be a great year.
I mean, that, what are you going to do? This is the,
I don't know. And I'm bummed out because I know over the break, we were going to do that little compilation of Biden blunders.
We did have an idea. We were going to do like a top 10 of the best Biden blunders. We never got to it. We did put out a bonus episode we'll talk a little bit about later in the show, I think. But yeah, we wanted to do that. There's a lot of material for a top 10 Biden blunder list. That's for sure. Maybe we
can. I know. I get little ideas and content daily from
yeah,
him.
I know. There's the hardest part would be trying to narrow it down to just 10.
Yeah.
So anyway, but there you go. 2020.
All right. Well, I love it.
All right. Well, let's get into the show. We've been jabbering long enough here. Let's get into
jacking around.
Yeah. Let's get into our topics. So you want to start with your first topic? What'd you bring for the first topic in 2022?
Yeah. Just so that we're clear.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the Ghislaine Maxwell trial and the guilty verdict. First off, I just want to say that I don't really feel like justice was served. So that's kind of disappointing. But a New York jury convicted her of grooming minors for sexual abuse at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein. You know, I'm sure everybody's familiar with her case. She was found guilty on 5 of 6 federal counts related to the Epstein sex trafficking ring. She pled not guilty and now faces a maximum of 65 years in prison. The jury was unanimous when they found Maxwell guilty of facilitating and participating in sexual abuse of children. And like I said, it was a shame because the U.S. attorney, Damian Williams, said that justice had been done. And I'm just not, I just can't let this go. I don't understand how anybody can say that, because without even going into any details or peeling apart any of the onion layers or anything, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to go, okay, she was found guilty of sexual abuse, grooming minors, all these different things. Well, we know that she wasn't just grooming them for herself. She wasn't just grooming them for Jeffrey. There was a huge customer base. So why are we just closing the book on that? Who are her customers?
Mm-hmm.
Reveal them all, every single one of them. Why are we not talking about that? If she is guilty of this, who in the hell were the freaking buyers? Mm-hmm. Reveal the buyers. You know, it kind of makes me think of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and that still pisses me off. And I feel like I need to be like posting reminders and keeping that in the light, because he was found innocent. So why isn't Gage Grosskreutz on trial?
Right.
I don't understand it. I mean, this stuff just doesn't make sense. And back to Ghislaine, her attorneys are already working on an appeal. They're standing strong in their claim for her innocence. Annie Farmer was one of the victims that had the opportunity to speak out. And she was saying that there are many, many more women than just the few that were able to testify. And according to reports from the FBI, apparently they lost mountains of evidence related to this sex trafficking ring.
Yeah, they conveniently lost it.
And there were also key witnesses and testimony that were also left out of the trial. And now I've read some reports of details saying that Epstein's network has been ordered to be sealed.
The judge ordered that at the end of this trial.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah. So how can they do that? Was she a buyer? Why was this ordered to be sealed? I want that answer. I need that answer.
If she wasn't a buyer, I suspect these people paid her off.
Yeah. I mean, is it just that because some of the buyers, some of the customers are such big people with endless amounts of finances that they just don't want to deal with going up against them because it's just going to be an uphill battle. And they're like, you know what? These people are just too big a fish to try to catch.
I think so. I mean, you can't.
It's disgusting.
I think that part of this story that doesn't get talked about a lot is, you know, you mentioned all of this evidence that was lost. I mean, and we're talking videotapes that were supposedly labeled. So they were labeled, and it's almost as if, and it's not a stretch to assume that this was part of Epstein's motivation. He was blackmailing all these people. You know, these are high powered people that have, like you say, endless amounts of money, but also endless amounts of power. And they're not going to let that power go easily. And not only can you blackmail somebody, but you can, I mean, here's another question. How did Jeffrey Epstein make all his money? I mean, here's a guy who just throwing around money all the time. Usually the IRS is very interested in how you're making all your money. How did he make all his money?
Right. Well, yeah. Where did his wealth come from?
My guess is he was bribing a lot of high powered officials and world leaders and God knows who, but it's a twisted story. And of course the media is mum on it, but this trial from the beginning was set up to fail. But I read an article by Ann Coulter. I don't know if you read it. I sent it to you.
I did. I grazed over that.
It's interesting. I haven't heard from Ann Coulter in quite a while, but she wrote an interesting article about this. And she gave a lot of credit to the jury who did come back with a guilty verdict, even though this trial was set up to fail from the beginning. I mean, it was a circus and they did everything they could, both sides, including the judge, to get Ghislaine off of all these charges. But it was almost, as Ann Coulter wrote, she wrote, it was almost like the opposite of jury nullification. So if you're familiar with jury nullification and how jurors can use their power to find people innocent for crimes that shouldn't be crimes, that, you know, maybe non-offending drug offenders, even though it's technically a crime via our government. Sometimes, as we know, over the past 2 years, our government puts policies in place, makes criminals out of people who shouldn't be criminals. So the jury just nullifies the case, and juries have a lot of power in that respect. Here in this case, it's like the opposite. You know, they were trying to get her off of what should be a crime, but everybody's trying to sweep it under the rug. Like there's no crime here. Well, there is a crime here, but you're right. She's not the only one in this. We need to know who. You can't convict somebody of selling young girls
and then not want to know who they sold them to.
I mean, that's just the beginning.
She's just the tip of the iceberg.
Can you imagine how much power Epstein had over the world?
Gosh, right?
He had. I mean, he could get anything he wanted.
Yeah.
What else I hate, you know, you hear as it's reported when it's reported, which is rare, but they always refer to these girls as underage women.
Okay. First of all, that doesn't even make sense. Underage women. Are they underage girls or are they women? Pick one.
You don't even have, they're just children. Just call them children. Underage women are children. That's what you're trying to say. Just say what you mean and mean what you say.
Right.
You know, but yeah, it's a play on words to make it sound not as bad perhaps, but yeah, just awful.
You know, all these people are coming out and saying, oh, justice was served. Bullshit.
Yeah. It is disgusting too, the way you see the FBI, you know, when they initially performed a search warrant on his, I think it was his apartment in Manhattan or wherever it was. And they found all these videotapes, but the search warrant apparently didn't allow them to confiscate anything. It was just to search the premises, not to take anything. And so
what's the point of that? What's the point of a search warrant if you're just like, oh yeah, you walk in and you're like, oh, okay, here's like a mass murder, blood on the walls, guns, dead bodies and everything. Cool. Let's go grab a bite to eat.
Yeah. I mean, right. Right. I don't know. But then they went and they got a broader warrant that would allow them to, but instead of like keeping a agent on the scene at the site to protect the evidence, they all left. And I mean, it's so, again, you know, who's getting to these people? How many of those people are involved in this? I mean, it's so blatantly poor police work that you have to be suspicious of a lot.
Lots of questions. But anyway, yeah, so that was my first topic. I just wanted to talk about it. And I don't think justice was served.
I mean, it's so weird because we've mentioned we call this the D program. And we try to talk about things that the media isn't covering or is getting inaccurate. And this is one of those topics that you would think it would be a big, big story. And they barely covered it. I mean, barely covered it really at all. And, you know, you hate to continually point out the hypocrisy, but could you imagine if, I mean, look what they did to Kavanaugh, right? When he was, when he was being confirmed for Supreme Court.
Right.
Where's the Me Too movement on this story? This should be a huge story for the media.
Right.
Nothing from them. No outrage. It's silence. Radio silence.
It's terrible.
So I don't.
We need a news station that's not run by the
government.
Leftist elite. Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to be, like I've mentioned, it's supposed to be a watchdog of the government, not in bed with the government. That defeats the entire purpose. Some people call the media the fourth branch of government. And unfortunately, that's what it seems to have become.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my first topic. What have you got?
Okay. So for my first topic, I ran across this video of a gentleman by the name of Scott Davison, who is the CEO of Indiana Life Insurance. So this is a guy who runs a life insurance company. And I ran across this video and it was pretty startling. I just want to play you this video clip. It's about a minute long, but I think it's worth listening to. And then I want to kind of discuss it a little bit along with other COVID related items that I wanted to talk about here. So here we go. We're going to listen to Scott Davison, CEO of Indiana Life Insurance.
And we are seeing right now the highest death rates we have ever seen in the history of this business, not just at One America. The data is consistent across every player in that business. Now, this is primarily working age people, 18 to 64, that are in employers like all the employers on the screen here. And what we saw just in third quarter, we're seeing it continue into fourth quarter, is that death rates are up 40% over what they were pre-pandemic. Just to give you an idea of how bad that is, a three sigma or a one in 200 year catastrophe would be 10% increase over pre-pandemic. So 40% is just unheard of. And what the data is showing us is that the deaths that are being reported as COVID deaths greatly understate the actual death losses among working age people from the pandemic. It may not all be COVID on their death certificate, but deaths are up just a huge, huge numbers.
So, you know, this is an interesting place to get information from is life insurance companies, because they have a financial stake and are watching this very closely. Financially, this is going to be tough on them. So this is their business. This is what they look at. 40% increase. He says that's a three sigma or more than that. Actually, he said a 10% increase would be a one in 200 year event for a 10% increase. So to have a 40% increase, it's like a three black swan events all at the same time.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. I thought it was also interesting. He mentioned that it's not that the deaths they're seeing in this increase are 18 to 64 year olds. working age people, and it's not all COVID. That's not what they're seeing as the driver of this increase. So, you know, I don't know. What could it be? What could be causing this?
So if all the deaths aren't COVID, what?
He doesn't mention that, but I don't know. You can certainly.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's super controversial, but we've mentioned it on here before. Every time I turn around, I'm reading something about a death or an adverse event from people that are vaccinated.
Yeah. I mean, you hate to just to say that. You don't want to sound more fear-mongering or conspiratorial, but you know, you can't help but wonder, you know, this is a new technology we're using. We're mandating it on everybody. You have to start asking the questions. Don't we need to start looking at this? And what's really sad is I saw an advertisement from the British Heart Foundation. This was in the UK. The British Heart Foundation put out an ad asking for donations to that organization. And in the ad, we'll post this on our show notes page, it shows a young girl, probably 11, 12, 13 years old, so quite young, having a heart attack on a soccer field. Then it's this video of, you know, oh, donate to the British Heart Association so that we can, you know, work to end this, as if this is some big problem. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we just weren't paying attention before, but I don't recall seeing this many young people just keeling over on soccer fields and football fields and basketball courts.
I mean, right. And have you heard anything about this? I ran across this and I remember reading somewhere about some of the ingredients in one of the vaccines. And I mean, maybe this is controversial and conspiracy. I don't know. But I had read somewhere that there were AIDS virus ingredients in one of the vaccines. And I saw this article. It said that a comparison of official government reports suggests that fully vaccinated are developing acquired immunodeficiency syndrome much faster than anticipated.
Yeah, we've talked about that, that they're calling it VAIDS, vaccine acquired AIDS, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, because AIDS is just, it's kind of a broad term that means impairment basically of your immune system. Mm-hmm. So it's not HIV caused AIDS, it's vaccine caused AIDS. But yeah, there's been some speculation of that deep down in the dark web. But you know, yeah, I don't know. There's something weird going on and there's a lot of questions and not a lot of answers, yet the mandates continue. And that's what's so frightening. I mean, we don't understand what's happening, but we continue to mandate this, to force this issue. And I don't understand how we can rationalize that. Although I will say, I did see on a bright note that the LA school district in California, the largest school district in the country, actually, I believe they are. We had talked on a previous show about how they had, of course, Newsom put this mandate that all school-age children had to be vaccinated to attend public school. And then he did this quite some time ago and it caused a bunch of controversy, but he maintained that this was how it was going to be in California, that any school-aged child had to have the vaccine from 5 all the way through 12th grade. And this was supposed to start, I think it was supposed to go into effect the first of the year or sometime here coming up, but there were some 30,000 students who hadn't been vaccinated and weren't intending to get it. And they were talking about kicking these 30,000 students out, sending them back to remote learning. And that's what they were going to do. And it was quite a story. Well, turns out they were bluffing and they have backed off of this and said, we're not going to kick them out. We don't have the resources to educate them remotely without a big disturbance in their education and the teachers and everything else. So they said they're going to postpone, I think. So we'll see, but they are backing off of this to some degree. So that's good to see. But many other places just continue with pushing these vaccines. I don't know if you saw this, Macron, the French president, came out the other day, I think just yesterday or so, and basically said that his goal as far as policies in France, his goal is to piss off the unvaccinated. That's what he wants to do. He wants to piss off the unvaccinated. And at one point he referred to them as non-citizens.
Wow.
So
I have a similar story. I won't name any names or anything, but a place of business basically reinstated their mask mandates. And the owner used the words, and this is verbatim, "So anyone not vaccinated needs to be punished by continuing to have to wear a mask." Punished.
Yeah, this is the mindset that, and they're just digging their heels in. Even though, you know, like I said, I started 2022 thinking this is going to be a great year. We've got some great news coming out with respect to the virus. Omicron was waving through, which I saw somebody refer to Omicron as the vaccine that the vaccine manufacturers couldn't make.
Oh, huh.
So, you know, this was going to come through and it's much less deadly. We're all going to get it at the same time, which will give us all immunity when we need it. And that this will just kind of fizzle out as we're seeing it happen in other parts of the world. But yet these people, these maniacs, they just dig their heels in. They can't let go. And I think that that's just symptomatic of this mass formation psychosis that we've talked about now several times on the show. You know, that's big in the news, this mass formation psychosis. That's all over the news, thanks to Dr. Malone and Joe Rogan, which is great. And I love to see it. I just, you know, want to mention, we were talking about it 2 months ago, but at any rate, it's great to see it become mainstream to some degree, because frankly, the first step in solving a problem is admitting you have a problem. So to see, you know, to see everybody kind of understand what this is a good step and a positive step. So I love to see it. But our mayor here, this is a funny story. Our mayor in this town I live in posted on Facebook. He said, "Now I'm back to bed from yesterday's COVID booster shot. I don't feel great today, but I'd rather have shot effects than real COVID again." So he's obviously already had COVID, and he says he'd rather be sick with the booster than with COVID. They're delusional. It doesn't make sense.
And who are these people that are getting the vaccine that have already had COVID? You have natural immunity. What?
I don't know. But they have this delusion. It's a psychosis. It's a mass formation psychosis, I think. And that even when they're presented with facts, they can't get out of this trance they're in, and they just it's really scary to watch, frankly. It's scary to watch.
No, you're right, it is.
But yeah, those were just some things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about what that life insurance CEO had to say. I thought that was interesting to keep an eye on. There's one other comment I wanted to make as we're talking about COVID generally. I ran across this other video. Now, this is Fauci, our favorite scientist,
little monkey,
Dr. Fauci.
Favorite monkey.
This was a comment he made back in December of 2009. Okay, so this was a decade ago. Okay, and I want you to listen carefully to what he says here, and then we can talk about it for just a minute. But here he is.
You know, as a public health person, I would think that the goal that I would see to really stabilize the system and therefore make it less of a crisis issue when you get to have a pandemic flu, which we know will again occur as was predicted, even though they're rare events, they do occur, is to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And what we foresee in the future is that influenza vaccine will be something that is essentially a routine vaccination for everyone. And if we then transition that into the universal vaccine, then you may only have to do that every couple of years and get people protected, not only from seasonal flu, but from pandemic flu. In my mind, that's the end game. And that's good for the companies too, because they're going to know and predict that every year, the vast majority of the American population is going to get vaccinated, not having to guess, will they or will they not this year or next year?
It's good for the companies too. They can budget accordingly. It's great for the
company. He didn't even have a slip up there. How about that other video clip where he slips up and says Chinese communists instead of Chinese scientists?
A little Faucian slip, as we can call him now. But this is interesting, because he's basically admitting that, you know, why is he worried about the companies, frankly? I mean, I guess you could make the case that, well, he wants the vaccine companies to stay in business, so because they perform a crucial service to public health. You could make that case, but why wouldn't you want them to stay in business because they create a safe and effective product, instead of making them stay in business because they're mandated their product to everyone and they are immune from any liabilities? I mean, if you want really great vaccines, which apparently he supposedly he does, then you want the vaccine companies to make really great and safe and effective vaccines. And you don't do that by giving them a monopoly liability from lawsuits. You create a very dangerous situation. So on one hand, I don't even know why he's worried about the companies. That shouldn't be his concern. The companies should be successful on their own right because they provide a quality product.
Right.
That should be what keeps the companies alive, not government policies. So I'm not sure why he's so fixated on making sure the companies do well. He should be fixated on, he should just go away is really what he should do, frankly.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, I don't know if you ever, I haven't finished the whole thing, the whole Rogan Malone interview, Joe Rogan with Dr. Malone, but
I haven't either. Yeah. I started listening to it the other day and it was awesome. And
it
then
is
I
awesome.
Got pulled away.
Yeah. So it's 3 hours, you know, it's lengthy, but it's worth trying to get through. And I'm still working on it myself, but I have of course seen plenty of clips come out of it and listened to parts of it, but he talks at one point in there about Fauci and how a lot of Dr. Malone and a lot of his peers have known that Fauci is a liar. I mean, they've just for decades have just kind of shrugged their shoulders about it. Yeah, there's Fauci.
Well, the unfortunate part is that he has so much power and influence.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be a big deal if he was a manager at JCPenney and whatever.
Right. No, I know. And that's why it's frightening. It's unfortunate. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So that's basically, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about COVID when you get to what's your next topic? Maybe we'll move right into it at this point.
Well, my next topic is I wanted to talk about the New York Health Commissioner admitted to exaggerating the number of youth hospitalizations from COVID.
Well, it's great moving from talking about how much of a liar Fauci is to talking about,
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, this is just another one of those things that just has, I just have like my mouth hanging open. Like how is this happening? But Dr. Mary Bassett, she's New York's acting health commissioner. She admitted that she exaggerated the number of COVID hospitalizations of children to cause parents to vaccinate their children, to vaccinate their kids. Bassett, who came down with COVID last week, kind of ironically, despite being fully vaccinated, said in a press conference that the state health department misleadingly framed the numbers to scare parents. Even Fauci admitted that the youth hospitalization stats for COVID include those that were hospitalized for other issues. So these children that are getting admitted to the hospital were getting admitted for other reasons. They weren't getting admitted for COVID, but right. If they happened to have COVID as well, they were counting it as being admitted for COVID.
They could go in with a broken leg, something that has, they have no symptoms of COVID. They're not there for COVID. They don't even know they have COVID, but the policy is you have to test everyone who comes into the hospital.
Right.
Test them for COVID, no matter what.
Like, right.
They could come in for a broken leg. You test them for COVID. If they're positive, which we also know, according to the CDC director, Walensky, that the PCR tests are way too sensitive. They can count you as positive 12 weeks after you're over it.
That's right.
So these tests are just ridiculous. So of course they're overcounting, and mm-hmm. then you're counted as a hospitalization with COVID from COVID, and you were in there for a broken leg. It's insanity, really.
I mean, I guess I do appreciate the fact that they're being honest, you know.
Finally, after two years.
Yeah. But I mean, where's the accountability? I mean, how can people just sit and listen to this news and not be outraged? I mean, I hope people are. I mean, I hope people are outraged. I hope parents are outraged. I mean, think about how many parents that got scared into vaccinating their child because of this bullshit.
Right.
And they admit it. Yeah. This is why we padded the numbers. We wanted to scare you parents. We wanted to scare you.
It is pretty disgusting. But back to the numbers, because I think it's important for people to understand this. I mean, the media is just lying to you. You really need to drill down. This is from that blog I've talked about before, Coffee and COVID by Jeff Childers. He does a great blog. Today's blog, as a matter of fact, talks about this. He's based in Florida. So a lot of his information is Florida specific, but it's interesting because it's the same kind of policies that are driving all this. He says, the Jackson Health System hospitals currently have 468 patients who have tested positive for COVID-19, 468. But of those, 235, so that's 50%, are admitted to the hospital primarily for COVID. So half of them aren't there for COVID. So half of the patients in the hospital is not for COVID, but they're mm-hmm. in the COVID statistic to, like you say, scare everybody. So the numbers, and we've known this and been trying to ring the bell on this since the very, very beginning. These numbers are manipulated.
Well, and I'll go so far as to say that I think some people were even called conspiracy theorists because
right.
we were saying that these numbers are false. These numbers are not correct. They're padding the numbers and people, oh, you guys are conspiracy theorists. That's not true. They would never do that.
Yeah.
And then they come out and say, yeah, we did that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's what they've done. And some people are like giving them credit for coming forward. There was this segment that Brian Stelzer did on CNN. He did this interesting segment the other day where he talked about how traumatic this has been for children and we need to stop punishing children and the same stuff we've been screaming for 2 years. And mm-hmm. he comes out and he finally says it as if it's this big epiphany he's just had.
And yeah, like where the hell have you been?
Right. And he gets credit for this from some people on the right saying, well, good. And I'm sorry. No. You know, the damage is done and we need to make sure to hold these people responsible. He's been the one advocating for shutdowns and school shutdowns and
better. Yeah. I mean, how many children are permanently scarred emotionally, mentally, and even physically? I saw a picture of a little child the other day and her whole chin was all raw and
from the mess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these children are scarred.
Yeah.
Permanently. In one way or another, or in several different ways. I hate to even think about it.
Right.
It's heartbreaking.
Right. I mean, we talked about the study that came out showing that the IQ of babies born during the pandemic, 20 points lower than babies.
Yeah,
born.
That's right.
We have no idea what the long-term ramifications of what we've done are going to be. And we can't allow these people to jump a sinking ship. We need to hold these people accountable. Yeah, they
absolutely
can't be left.
But, you know, the sad part is that even if they're held accountable, like we've talked about other things before, the damage is already done.
It is.
The damage is done. It's sickening. It's just heartbreaking.
But
it's heartbreaking.
We can hope to try to ensure that nothing like this ever happens again. You know, the other thing I wanted to point out while we were talking about hospitalizations was in the same blog, but I think a couple days before, he made a reference. Now, I tend to trust this guy. I think he's a reliable source. But this piece of information he put, even I find hard to believe, and he didn't give a source as to where he got this information. So I'm going to put it out there with that caveat. I haven't had a chance to check this myself with some sources. So I don't know how accurate this is, but I'm curious to learn. So I want to challenge our listeners to do some checking on this in your own communities, your own hospitals, see what you can find, because I'd be really curious to know if this is in fact accurate. But what he suggested was that the hospitalization rate in Florida and nationwide, he said in a blog just from a few days ago, is about the same for this time of year as it was in 2018.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was fascinating. And again, he didn't list his source and I haven't checked on it. I generally trust his information, but I'd love to see some more information on this specifically mm-hmm. because, you know, they're screaming about the hospitals being overrun. Of course, they've fired a lot of the staff, so that could play a part of why they're feeling overwhelmed. But
right.
But if the hospitalization rate, you know, we have to remember as lay people who don't work in the medical profession, we get numbers without context and we don't understand what they mean. Hospitals aren't designed to sit empty. They don't build a hospital with the assumption that we're not going to use half of these beds. They build
right.
the amount of
That's beds a good point.
That they think they're going to need at peak times.
Right.
So when they say the hospitals are full, oh yeah. That's why you build.
Well, isn't that what a hospital's for?
Right now.
Yeah. That's a great point.
So, but they just tell us this without any context and we start to panic, but I would like to see what the numbers are for hospitalizations right now versus like pre-pandemic January numbers, December, January mm-hmm. numbers. So anyway, he's saying that they're about the same and that's very important information for, I think, the public to know. And so I'd like to get some confirmation on that. So if you're listening and, you know, you have some information or can, I don't know where you'd go if you can get that information, but mm-hmm. anyway, check that out. We'll see if that's accurate, but yeah, right. there's a lot of fear mongering going around and
it's just terrible. I wonder if someday, like all this will come out and everybody will go, wow, we got duped by the biggest scam in the history of our nation.
I think it will. It'll be more in a historical context. So I think when the dust settles and the history books start writing about this time, because most of us will be dead, right? Mm-hmm. But history will wonder what the heck we were thinking. History will write about this moment in time the way we write about Nazi Germany. And we ask, well, how did they let that happen? What were they thinking? Right. That's how the history books will write about what's happened to us now, I suspect.
Yeah. Anyway, moving along, what have you got for, what do you have for topic?
Okay. Today, so for my second topic, I wanted to talk, we're recording this on Thursday, January 6th, the infamous day, the 1 year anniversary of the murder of Ashley Babbitt, who was a white, unarmed young woman who was murdered by a black police officer, in which no investigation has been had, no charges filed, and that goes unresolved for what has now been a year. So I just wanted to talk about this as we come up on the first anniversary of what the Democrats like to call the insurrection. The insurrection actually happened, I think, a couple months prior to that in November when they stole an election, but at any rate, it kind of is a gut punch to hear people talk about it as an insurrection, which I just think is such an over-exaggeration of what really happened. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, if you actually think about what happened that day, which was largely, in my estimation, a bunch of Antifa and BLM agitators, along with undercover federal agents, instigating a break-in at the Capitol, then yes, there was a big problem that happened and we should look into that. But short of that, I don't see what they're talking about. It's like, it's really bizarre because it's like two different realities. And I mean, it's so blatantly.
Yeah. It's hard to wrap your, well, and you know, they say like, how many times do you have to repeat something and then people just start to believe it, you know, even if it's, you know, if it's a lie, you just keep repeating it and repeating it and repeating it. And then people will just believe it.
That's exactly right. I think you're onto something with this. I think that's what their strategy is. I mean, there were reports that Nancy Pelosi was in contact with the sergeant at arms at the Capitol. They mm-hmm. knew. And there were so many other incidences, like Trump tried to get National Guard and they to come and help kind of secure the area with all the people that were going to be in the area. They mm-hmm. they did not allow it. They wouldn't call the National Guard in. So this was a setup from the very beginning, just like the kidnapping of Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan comes mm-hmm. to find out that was a setup, total entrapment. The FBI set that whole thing up. Mm-hmm. Which brings me to the topic of mass formation again. And I know, you know, we talked about that several months ago, and then we released that bonus episode about it. But as I was preparing for this show and thinking about January 6th, there's a couple other points that this Dr. Matthias Desmet mentioned about mass formation that I think are critically important and that help shine a light in what happened on January 6th as well. Is one of them, he talks about staying peaceful. He talks about speaking out, that it's really important that we continue to speak out, but that we have to do it peacefully. And the reason is that he talks about is because they want you to become violent. They almost entrap you like they did on January 6th, and they'll entice you to become violent because then when you do, they will use that as justification to become even more tyrannical and even more authoritarian. They can point to you and they can say, see, look at how crazy these people are. We have to institute even more lockdowns and we have to be even more aggressive. And they can take our side and they can lock us away like they did with the January 6th.
And all those people are still—
They are. That's a whole
nother— Locked up, no trial, no nothing,
but
no anything, right?
That's right. There hasn't been a trial. I don't even know what charges they've been. I mean, they're political prisoners. You think that that's not something that happens in America. Well, here we are. Yeah. Here we are. But yeah, it's so important to stay peaceful about this. Listen, and I'm a big Second Amendment advocate too. And at a certain point, yeah, you start to wonder at what point do you defend your life to the death? But mm-hmm. it's so critically important to stay peaceful as long as absolutely possible, because they will use that to silence us. And once they silence us, this was another interesting point that was made, that once they are able to silence the opposition, which is us, that's when, historically speaking, first they silence the opposition, and then that's when the masses commit the most heinous atrocities. That's when you get things like, you know, mass extermination and really disgusting things that we can't imagine happening. But first they silence the dissenting voices. And it's much easier to silence the dissenting voices if they can entice you into violence, because then that justifies them silencing you. You know, these are violent. These are violent extremists. We have to silence them and shut them away. Mm-hmm. So it's vitally important to stay peaceful. But again, when you have agitators and FBI informants within the crowd trying to agitate everything.
Right. Makes it really hard.
Yeah. It's scary.
It's something straight out of a freaking sci-fi movie.
It is. And the other thing you talked about too, is that these regimes, these totalitarian regimes, are always self-destructive. So there's no reason really for us to be violent anyway. If we just hang tight long enough, they will self-destruct. So we just need to be patient and be nonviolent and peaceful and keep speaking out.
Right. That's really important.
Really important, because you can try to pick off a few people and it grows mm-hmm. one by one.
Yeah.
And the dissenting voice acts as a, like you say, it's when those dissenting voices are silenced that the worst atrocities are usually committed at that point by the masses. So speaking out is important. Staying peaceful is important. And having patience is important. So, but yeah, I mean, January 6th is just awful. And the way they're just the exaggeration and this whole victim, you talk about a victim mentality. I mean, these people, like they were, if they were victimized by anyone, it was by themselves who didn't.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, they victimized themselves.
Yeah, basically. So anyway, I just wanted to comment on that. I know that's been in the news and it's just so distorted in the media. And so wanted to talk about the January 6th anniversary.
Definitely a good thing to talk about and bring up today for sure.
Yeah. And maybe we, you know, we release this episode in memory of Ashley Babbitt as we come up on the 1 year anniversary of her murder. So, and hopefully pray that justice will be done for Ashley Babbitt.
Yeah, hope so, for her and for her family and friends.
Right. So anyway, all right, should we get into our good news stories? We could use some good news right about now, don't you think?
Yes. Yes. I'll go ahead and start.
Yes,
if that's all right.
Yes.
So my good news story is about some damn fine work, and that's DAM. I ran across this article where these beavers that would have otherwise been euthanized got a second chance at life.
Beavers. Awesome.
Like actual beavers. They got a second chance at life by being able to help the dry Utah deserts. What they did is they used the beavers and their ability to create these dams to positively impact the desert. It said that studies have shown that beaver dams can vastly improve the quality of wetlands and streams, leading to better animal life and improved river health. It was for this service that they kind of named them as like ecosystem engineers. So yeah, so they used these beavers, they relocated them to these Utah deserts, and just kind of let them do their thing. And they started building these dams, and it kind of, you know, rejuvenated and saved these dry desert areas. So,
and they were going to, they were going to be euthanized otherwise.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Did so say why
they were, it didn't. And that's a great question. Like, yeah, I wonder why maybe just because of too many of them. Yeah. I mean, so I would imagine it was just because there were so many of them and they're destructive, you know, they can be very destructive, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, but they took these little guys and rehomed them to the Utah deserts. And I thought it was kind of cute. They called them like ecosystem engineers.
That is cute. You know, we're big animal fans here at the D program. So
for sure.
We have a good animal story. So that's cute. That's good.
Anyway, so that was my little good news story. It made me happy that these little guys that were gonna be put down, they got a second chance at life, and they're helping the environment and the ecosystem in the dry, hot desert.
All right, very good. All right, well, I'll move into my good news story. I wanted to talk about a movie that I took the family to over the holiday break. It's called American Underdog, and it's the story of Kurt Warner, the MVP NFL quarterback who played for the Rams. And of course, we had to go to it because Kurt Warner, we get the bragging rights of being the town from which he originated.
That's right. Didn't he work at Hy-Vee?
He did. He worked at the local grocery store here. In fact, the same grocery store that my daughter worked at for a short stint, the same grocery store I frequent very regularly, the same grocery store that our grandmother used to go to, and she would brag that Kurt Warner used to bag her groceries.
That's right.
So she was always, that was, you know, cute bragging rights we had here in Cedar Falls. He went to the local university, my alma mater, my husband's alma mater, and played football at the University of Northern Iowa. And anyway, so this movie is all about his life. And the reason I bring it up as a good news story is because I'd heard great reviews about this movie and I was anxious to watch it just because of the local connection to him, but I was pleasantly surprised to hear it getting such good reviews. And so I was even more excited to go, and we took all the kids, took the whole family, and it was, I can vouch for the great reviews. It was a great movie. And what made it great, what wasn't just his story, which is a great feel-good underdog story, which is always fun to watch, but the movie was such a feel-good, heartwarming, and family-friendly movie. It was God-fearing. It was religious. It was the kind of movie you're not embarrassed to sit next to your children and watch. The kind of movie.
Need more of those.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And so, you know, we scream about Hollywood and the current culture as being so awful and disgraceful and disgusting and sexualizing our children and just putting out garbage all the time. And it gets worse and worse with each generation. Well, we finally have a movie out of Hollywood that's well done, that is just wholesome, feel good fun for the whole family. And I can't emphasize that enough. And I read a review that Steve Dice, he's a pretty big podcaster. He actually podcasts out of Des Moines, Iowa. So he also has that kind of local connection. He put out a big long review of the movie as well. And one of the things he mentioned in his review was, you know, that we scream about Hollywood. And then when they do put out a movie like this, it's important that we go support it so that
to send
the message to keep putting stuff out. And actually, which was part of what the reason I brought it up as a good news story, not just the story of Kurt Warner, but the fact that this movie is actually doing quite well. It actually broke the top five grossing movies over the weekend that it was released. And it only missed the number four spot by about $25,000. And it was only out for 2 days, as opposed to usually it's 3 days. It's like Friday, Saturday, Sunday for movies for their opening weekend. This was released on Saturday. So it only had 2 days of the weekend and still was in the top five. So
that's great.
It's really great that people are responding to this, to this type of movie. And so I just encourage you all to check it out. It sparked some really great conversations on the ride home from the movie theater about just inspiring things about work ethic, about never giving up, about the importance of family, about dedication. And it's great.
Hopefully people are getting thirsty for some of that feel good stuff.
Right. It seems like it. Like I said, it did pretty well at the box office. And so it's great to
see it
do so well, and that Hollywood actually put this out. There's great acting. It's a solid movie, you know. So
who plays Kurt Warner?
Zachary Levi, who I'm not really that familiar with. He looks familiar. I don't know what other movies he's been in, but Dennis Quaid is in this movie. So there are some big name, you know, bigger names in it. The acting is solid, and the story is great. It brought a tear to my eye on more than one occasion throughout the movie. I looked over at my daughter at one point, and she, you know, she was a little choked up. So
really,
yeah, it's, you know, in a good way. It's
good.
Just overwhelming. So
I'll have to check that out. I have not seen it. So
yeah. So I just wanted to talk about and highlight that movie. And Kurt Warner, he's a cool guy. And the fact that we hang out in his old stomping ground and can kind of claim some of the credit of his story from where he came from. So,
right. I love it. Well, I will have to check that movie out. And along those lines, I will move right into my quote of the week.
Okay.
Because it ties into more Hollywood and TV. My quote comes from John Dutton, the character that Kevin Costner plays on Yellowstone, which if anybody has been watching it, it's kind of the hot show, and
it is.
Just ended their fourth season this last Sunday night. So my quote comes from the good old John Dutton. And my quote is, "No one has a right. You have to take a right or stop it from being taken from you." And I thought that was, I just thought that was really appropriate for kind of what's going on in the world right now.
It reminds me of the quote that I think it was a quote from our last full length show that I had read. In fact, the quote said, "People only have as much liberty as they have the intelligence to want and the courage to take." So it's kind of along those same lines, but I know a lot of people that love Yellowstone. A lot of our listeners, I suspect, are big Yellowstone fans. And so, Yeah, that's definitely a great.
I want to be Beth Dutton in my next life.
I got to be honest. I haven't watched Yellowstone.
What? Oh, well, I tell Sarah, you, Lena.
You watch Impractical Jokers and I'll watch Yellowstone.
Deal.
And then
Deal.
Come back and powwow about it. But yeah,
we'll have a little review sesh.
But I've heard good things about her as well. So
she's a freaking badass.
Yeah.
She might be a little too badass for some people, but I think she's freaking awesome. All right. So what's your quote, Sarah?
Okay. So it's interesting. I've been studying a lot about this mass formation over the last couple of weeks, of course, since it's come out, and I ran across this quote and I thought it was just so brilliant. And then I wanted to use it, but I couldn't find it when I was preparing for the show. I couldn't find it again. I couldn't remember the quote. I couldn't figure out how to search for it. And I was so bummed, and I just came up with a different quote, which was fine. And I was just going to use a different quote and didn't think much of it. Well, then I started reading this book. It's called A Plague Upon Our House by Scott Atlas, which I highly recommend. You remember him? He's the doctor that Trump brought on to the task force.
No, I did not remember that.
Yeah, it was too little too late. It was like the last 4 months of his administration. I think he was bringing Atlas on to kind of start to try to replace Fauci. But again, it was just too little too late. And then he lost the election and then Atlas resigned. But Atlas was an advocate for not locking down, not shutting down. And anyway, so he's written a book about his experience, and I got it as a Christmas gift. And I opened it up and started reading it just a couple nights ago. And lo and behold, the quote that I was trying to look for several days ago was at the end of the first chapter. And it just kind of blew me away. And I'm like, oh my God,
oh, wow.
What are the odds? So I stumbled across the quote again. So I'm going to use this quote for our show today. And the quote is by Charles Mackey, who I'm not exactly sure who that is, to be honest. But at any rate, in 1841, he said, "Men, it has been well said, think in herds. It will be seen that they go mad in herds, while they only recover their senses slowly and one by one." Men go mad in herds and recover slowly one by one.
Oh, I like that.
It's really quite good, because as we've talked about mass formation and how important it is to continue to speak out and to continue to offer that dissenting narrative, because while you can make a whole mass of people go crazy all at once, they're only going to come out of it one by one. And so we just pick them off one at a time, and it's slow and treacherous and painful, but we have to keep speaking, because that's how they come out of it, one at a time. And you never know what's going to be somebody's red pill moment. You have to keep trying different things, and then you hope at some point it's going to click for them. And it's different for every person. It's so individualized that they just kind of come out of it one by one. But I thought that, and he said that in 1841. So human nature, human nature never changes, does it?
Nope.
Anyway,
it does not. That was a good one.
So there you go. Those are our quotes. That's our show this week. We're glad you tuned in again. The first show of 2022. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope you join us every Friday for more of the D program. In the meantime, don't forget to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Gab. And head over to our website as well. We have all our show notes and lots of other information there. That's www.thedprogram.net. Until next time.
Cheers.